It's a Friday, and it's McKellen, and it's Shannon, and we say hello, and thanks
hello.
For stopping by.
That's very polite of you, Bob. Well, thank you. You know, like I say, that was very Mr. Rogers of you, you know?
Thank you, John. That's the kind of guy I am, you know?
Pardon?
Shut up. So, we never have a conversation with Shai Davidi that I don't find intriguing. And I don't agree with everything he says by any stretch of the imagination. Because he is a heart and soul baseball guy who buys into whatever's going on.
And he's a thinker. He's a thinker.
Well, he is, but he does not have a whole lot of contrarian points of view. But he has the extraordinary ability to almost convince you that what he believes actually is worth believing. And we'll put that to the test today. Shai Davidi of Sportsnet on baseball when we come back after these messages. It's McKellen. It's Shannon with you today, a Friday, and a not very productive, but perhaps instructive series against the New York Yankees this week in Buffalo.
You mean they learned they weren't that good?
Well, we're learning more and more every day about this team. Shai Davidi of Sportsnet joins us to chat about this. You know, the strangest thing, I don't know whether we should feel angry about this as Torontonians or not, but we give our friends in Buffalo, our major league team, to view and supervise in the interim here, and the New York Yankees arrive, and the Blue Jays are playing the visitors. Clearly, the overwhelming majority of people that went to the games were New York fans. Should we be angry at this, Davidi?
I don't really think that's fair. You know, I mean, the Buffalo fans gave him great support in the series with Houston and Miami. And look, I mean, there would be people in Buffalo who have been Yankee fans for generations, long before the Blue Jays existed, right? And,
yeah, sure.
You know, they're to be honest, you know, the Bisons have gone above and beyond in terms of accommodating the Blue Jays and helping them out. You know, they're running their business in Trenton, New Jersey this year so that the Blue Jays can have a temporary home. You know, that's an incredible sacrifice. The community has been good to them. You know, this is going to be an issue with the Yankees coming every time the Yankees come to town, because that's just where, you know, there's a little bit more loyalty. But I think if you look at everything else, you know, I don't know that you could have possibly asked for much more from Buffalo.
You know, it in many ways, Shai, it speaks to the border. And it speaks to the fact that on cable television in Western New York, you get Yes Network. You don't get mm-hmm. Sportsnet. And so you get 162 Yankee games, and you don't get very many Blue Jay games unless they're on one of the national outlets.
Yeah. Well, I also think naturally, if you're an American living in Western New York, you're probably going to gravitate more towards the Yankees. And maybe, you know, the fact that the Bisons have had the affiliation with the Blue Jays since 2014, I'd like mm-hmm. to say, 2015, mm-hmm. You know, maybe that's created some fans and some connection between Bisons players that have graduated to the Blue Jays and brought some Bisons fans along with them. But I just think it's natural that your loyalty is going to be to the Yankees if you're an American across the border. I mean, look, even if you go to Windsor, you know, there are a lot of and that area, a lot of people there are Tigers fans and not Blue Jays fans. So,
Windsor, how about London? Go to London, and half the bars in London when we're in a regular world, Tiger paraphernalia, not Blue Jay paraphernalia.
Yeah, so, you know, I do think that there's a natural predisposition for Yankee fandom there. But, you know, I think you look at the support the Blue Jays have gotten overall, and, you know, I think the coming series, coming home series, will really tell a bit more of the tale there. But, yeah, I think those Yankee home games are, you know, the only difference between there and being in New York is going to be the fact that you have the last at bat. That's the only edge.
Here's a stupid question that I've never asked before. Do you think the nickname plays any role in this? And let me clarify. You know, having been around this team since its inception, I want to say the Syracuse Chiefs were the AAA affiliate at the very beginning. And then, but then as you went down through the system, you had, of course, the Dunedin Blue Jays. You had the Kinston Blue Jays, I believe. Do you think that makes a difference in the relationship between the fan base in a minor league team and the major league team?
The
idea of having the Blue Jays as the nickname in the minor league team, does it bring you closer to being a Blue Jay fan, a Toronto Blue Jay fan?
It's interesting. I would say in general, to me, I think that your affiliation is going to be tied to geography mostly, right? And proximity. And then the thing that can change it is if you see a really awesome team on TV all the time and, you know, people gravitate towards winners. You know, I think, when I was growing up, you know, the Philadelphia Flyers were really good. And, you know, I was like, I really like Pelly Lindbergh. So, you know, I ended up becoming a Philadelphia Flyers fan.
Really?
For a period of time. Yeah. I mean, the Leafs were still my favorite team, but, you know, they were never in the playoffs. So I always had to pick for someone to root for. So, I think that impacts your fandom, your access and geography, you know, like people want to root for the team in their town, whether they're good or not. So, it's an interesting concept and whether, you know, you'd have sort of this, if you had more of a uniform nickname structure, would that help your fans? Maybe, but I still think that if you're a fan of a major league team in a minor league city, it's probably going to be one that's closer to you. Just like, you know, in New Hampshire right now, the Fisher Cats were the Blue Jays double A team. You know, are the people there going to be, you know, Blue Jays fans if you called them the New Hampshire Blue Jays instead of the New Hampshire Fisher Cats? No, they're probably going to still care more for the Boston Red Sox because they're an hour and a half away.
Yeah, but you do have if you're in New Hampshire, the players that you get to see in New Hampshire, if you're a true fan, are ultimately going to be Toronto Blue Jays. Mm-hmm. They're not likely to be Boston Red Sox. So, you know, I often wonder, and I've never lived in a minor league city. Well, I guess I did. I lived in Vegas for a while when they had the
51s.
Even before that, I think they were called the Las Vegas Stars.
Wow. That's
before the 51s. Anyway, just an idol.
You know what, Bob? You were right. It was a stupid question.
Yeah, I told you it was.
No, it's actually interesting, but I also do think the other factor there is just, you know, relationships with minor league players in minor league towns are fleeting, right? Like if somebody's there for a long time, that's not a good thing if you're a player in a minor league city. So,
well, if they're there for a long time, they're probably going to be there for a long time.
Right. And so I just, you know, like you have a connection to the team, but not to the players.
Maybe. Although you would have to think that any place Vladdy Guerrero played, that attachment would become pretty real. In any event, enough of that stuff. Let's get to the big league club. We know what's wrong. It's the bullpen. But more than the bullpen, it's the system that Major League Baseball has decided to employ, with starting pitchers being limited. If I'm not mistaken, this didn't begin as a pitch count thing. It began as we don't want starting pitchers to face the same lineup for a third time, because statistics show that hitters' familiarity with pitchers on a given night creates a slight advantage to them. Has all of this been completely and utterly overdone, in your opinion?
Well, that's an interesting question. So let's take a step back and let me just reframe it a little bit. How are you going to develop starting pitching in the future, given the way that you're employing it in the major leagues right now? And if you're going to apply some of the things that you're doing in the major leagues to guys as they're coming up the ladder, I mean, essentially you're building them to be 5 to 6 inning guys. And you're not going to really give them a chance to learn how to turn over a lineup a third time, how to manage on days when, your stuff isn't the best, how to really survive how to carry, you know, 150, 120 pitches on a consistent basis, because teams are being so careful. And so, and plus guys are max effort from the word go to the last pitch. And that's awfully tough to sustain. So, you know, I think when you say it's overdone, you know, I can see the statistical case for it, right? Like, you know, data don't lie. It makes sense. And a lot of times, you know, what you're bringing in from the bullpen is going to be better than, you know, a starting pitcher facing guys for the third time.
Well, that's theoretical.
80 to 100. I mean, again, it's not the case right now for the Toronto Blue Jays, but, you know, earlier in the season when they were healthier in the bullpen, it was, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you've got 96 with cut and sink and a nasty breaking ball coming out of the bullpen, and it's fresh versus, you know, a guy who the other team has turned over a couple times. And, you know, at that point, the statistical case is generally clear. But, you know, if you're casting forward longer term, like, where is the next generation of starting pitchers going to come from? You know, they're not the way that they're developing these guys in the minors. And I understand why everybody's so invested in trying to keep every arm healthy and trying to protect them. And it makes sense. And nobody wants that on their resume. But there's not going to be any starting pitching in the future. Mm. There's not. And how are you going at that point? Like, are you going to carry, you know, 30 man rosters so you can carry 15 man bullpens in order to get through a season? You know, and you're going to need like really 40 pitchers in your system just to get through a year. You know, that's the issue to me. And, you know, I think we look at it in the here and now, and it's definitely a problem in the here and now, but this is a much more global problem that is going to have wide scale implications for the game for years to come.
Well, the Blue Jays just invested a crap load of money in their new spring training, year-round training facility in Dunedin. The city of Dunedin invested money. I think Pinellas County invested money. I don't know who all put money in. They spent a boatload of money. It's a very impressive looking facility. And yet, even with limited innings, even with all this technology, the list of pitchers, not just on the Blue Jays, but the Blue Jays have certainly suffered from it, that have gone down with injuries related to pitching, is not lower. In fact, it's arguably higher than it's been in the past. And it speaks, I think, Shai, to what you were alluding to, that if you train a horse to run five furlongs, then put him in a six furlong race and be surprised if he slows down in the last furlong, you're stupid. And essentially, this is what I see baseball doing. I'm not sure I know what the answer is, but it doesn't seem to be working, does it?
It doesn't. And like, it can work in stretches. And, you know, look, I think even the Tampa Bay Rays last year, I think you saw an example. You know, they've been as advanced analytically as anybody, and as creative in their usage of pitchers as any team. Right. And then they caught up to them. You know, there just weren't enough innings, and, you know, they tore through their bullpen, and, you know, their bullpen wilted in the moment of truth against the Dodgers in the World Series. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's why they ended up losing that series. You know, the problem is the decision, if you're a manager, it's so overwhelmingly obvious because of, you know, if I got 98 in the pen sitting there and, you know, am I going to trust that, or am I going to trust 93, 94 at 80 to 100 pitches? You know, that's how do you justify that as a manager? And the way that everybody gets second guessed these days, you know, not only from fans, most importantly, from, you know, front offices and analytic departments, you know, it makes it awfully tough as a manager to sort of trust your guy and go with these traditional sort of ways of managing pitching. You know, it's just too difficult.
But missing in that equation is a completely different factor that I never hear anything about. And that is the reality that everybody has bad days. You, me, John has many bad days.
Not that many.
Pitchers have bad days. Pitchers have days when the breaking ball isn't breaking, when the fastball is flat, when the velocity is 2 or 3 miles an hour below what it normally is. Happens all the time. And so, and this is the case as much for bullpen guys as it is for starters. So now, I mean, what's the average number of pitchers that a team will use over 9 innings? Just on average. Is it around, do you think it's about 4? Maybe 4.5 per yeah, nine innings?
I would innings? Think so. I would think well, so. I'm yeah. ballparking that, but yeah.
Yeah, it's about that, right? So here's the dilemma you have. So now if I know I got to have, I'm going to, my starter's pitching, he's doing all right. He's made it through 6 innings. Now we're afraid his arm is going to fall off, which it won't, but we got to get him out of there. I got a call on 3 or 4 or maybe 5 guys from the bullpen. What are the chances that all of those guys are going to be on that day? Mm-hmm. They might be on many days. They might give me 95, 96 miles an hour and control, but there's a real chance one of them or more than one of them is going to be off that day. And that implodes the entire philosophy, doesn't it?
I mean, to a degree, but the thing is, you know, guys who can do the job, I mean, remember, like we're talking even 10 years ago, you know, if you're a hitting coach, you'd be saying to your guys, guys, let's work the count. Let's get the guy's pitch count up. Let's get into that bullpen as soon as we can. And then we can really tee off. And now you're saying, yeah, let's try to keep the starter in there as long as we can because of the type of stuff that's coming out of the bullpens these days. Like there are just more guys who are good from a, like the advancement in short stint pitching and the quality of short stint pitching has been remarkable in 5 years, in less than that. Like, you know, you take Rapsodo, you take a little bit of coaching, take a little bit of sticky stuff, and you can transform, a guy who's all over the place to someone who's, you know, gonna hose big velo by you with a nasty breaking ball that's gonna disappear from your sight lines. You know, that it's just they're so plentiful right now, Bob, that, you know, as much as those odds you mentioned, you know, they're very significant. And, you know, for a team like the Blue Jays right now, that's certainly coming up and biting them in the butt. But by and large, you know, I mean, you have to remember the Blue Jays are into, you know, relievers 10 through 20 something on their depth chart right now. You know, they're so far down their depth chart. You know, if they had their dudes, you know, if they had the Tampa Bay Rays bullpen, they'd be the Tampa Bay Rays right now.
Okay, so but is it, first of all, is this a discussion all the other 29 teams are having? or is this something that is more Blue Jay centric? And the other thing is, wasn't this all of this stuff, wasn't this to try to get the game faster, to the game more palatable, so that we weren't seeing so many pitching changes and that we weren't seeing the 3 hour and 30 minute games anymore? Wasn't that part of all of this?
Well, I mean, that's so there are competing interests here, right?
That's, you know, right.
You're looking at the way this is managed. This is managed from the, you know, from an analytical data perspective in terms of, you know, like what's your best matchup at certain points, right? You know, I was talking to a coach with one team, a National League club, and he was telling me that their philosophy is to win every matchup in a game. And so they make moves early. They'll flip guys, pinch hit for guys, to the point where sometimes late in games where you need somebody to kind of do the job, you run out of players. And maybe at that point you're forced to use a pitcher to pinch run or a pitcher to pinch hit or something like that. But that mentality of win every matchup, of trying to sort of, you know, use your best data and your best information to create slight margins at every opportunity over the course of the ballgame. I mean, that's part of what this is. And that's not helping your time of game.
No.
Time of game is something that Major League Baseball is worried about because, you know, their polling is saying that, hey, fans aren't engaged. And, you know, be honest, like how many of us want to watch a 3 hour, 20 minute ball game every night for 162 days? No thanks, right? Like, I think the one of the games I most remember, and there are a lot of reasons for this because it was an incredible game, but, you know, Mark Burley and Roy Halladay getting it done in just under 2 hours.
Yeah.
Right. You know, that's beautiful. But, you know, I think if you want to be in the 2 to 3 hour, that's a sweet spot. Once you get over three, I just think it's too much. But, you know, that doesn't line up with what data is telling teams is the best way to manage a ball game. And that is a fundamental issue right now in the game.
Well, you know, there used to be many pitchers in Major League Baseball who struck out almost nobody and pitched to contact. And so one of the resulting statistics that came out of that was ground ball ratio, which was perceived to be a positive, obviously. A, you keep the ball in the ballpark, and B, you've got four infielders as opposed to three outfielders and a lot less space to cover. And you're presumably going to get more outs with a ground ball than you will with a ball hit in the air. And yet we aren't in an era of pitching to contact now. We're in an era of pitch to swing and miss. That's what you're looking to get. And I don't know, it just, you know, maybe it's a philosophy that is past. Maybe all these baseball people today are a hell of a lot smarter than I am. But I see the problems that this is creating, and what I'm seeing a reluctance to say, well, wait a second, we thought this would work, but we didn't see this happening here. All these pitchers.
I think that's natural. I think that's natural. If you go through any of the other sports that have tried to create change.
I know, John. I know.
I mean, you know, Shai's favorite team, the Philadelphia Flyers, you know, in the NHL, they put all these rules in 2005 and 2006 to try to get rid of the ugly penalties and try to make it faster. And they made it too fast. And now we ended up with too many hits to the head and too many injuries of the upper body because the guys going into the end boards at high velocity. So you can never think through it till the end. And that becomes the problem.
Sorry, Shai, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, like it's a really interesting discussion. I think one of the things, okay, you can trace this back almost to, and with this is obviously an oversimplification, but it's sort of a, you know, a few events, right? So you get information, which allows you have these measures, Rapsodo being, you know, primary one, which allow you to measure specific individual skills. And then you've got these problems. So defensive shifts are taking away ground ball hits. What do you do? Hit it over. Okay. How to hit it over the infield. Okay. Then how do you do that? Okay. You got to adjust your swing. You got to change your swing path. You chase launch angle. Right. And suddenly you got guys launching balls over the fence and taking these max swings. And everyone says, you get some swing and miss. Okay. Well, that's a worthy trade-off. And then from the pitching side, you can train velocity and you can train spin, right? Especially with sticky stuff, which the game is trying to clean up now. But all of a sudden you can get these massive breaking balls, develop these unreal breaking balls, and you know, you can build up velocity and extend guys. And so you've got these skills that are being tailored. And then that, you know, that was the adjustment to the way the game is. And nobody's adjusted to this point and said, well, maybe we've gone too far. Maybe we need to go back to guys who can spray the ball and manipulate the bat and, you know, hit for singles and things like that. And, you know, pitchers are saying, you know what? If I throw max effort, I'm just shortening my career on every pitch. I have to learn as a starter to get through 7-8 innings, and I can't fear contact. You know, even though guys are hitting lasers all over the place, I can't be afraid of that. So I got to trust my defense. And you know, you can make the case that, you know, because of analytics, you know, the defenses are becoming more average because you can sacrifice the defender for the guy with the better bat, because you can just use defensive positionings to make up for a lot of shortcomings. So, you know, you've got a ton of unintended consequences in the game to the point that John was making, that, you know, solving for them at this point is super complicated because you're just going to create a whole other series of unintended consequences.
Well, again, you know, we can talk anomalies. You know, you were talking about guys like Halliday and Burley. I mean, Burley, when he came to the Blue Jays, if he threw an 84 mile an hour fastball, that was pretty quick. Mm-hmm. Halliday threw harder than that, but he was not known as a hard thrower. He was known as a guy who could get movement on all his pitches and had control and was smart as hell. Who's the best starting pitcher on the Blue Jays right now?
Well, it's interesting. Like you can make a case that it's Robbie Ray at this point.
You probably can. Who's the highest paid?
But you know, Hyunjin Ryu. I mean, like you can't have two guys who are doing it in more different ways.
Well, right? And therein lies my point. That here's a guy who throws 90-91 with his fastball. Most of his stuff is in the 80s. And historically, he's as good a pitcher as there is in baseball and has been. And the Blue Jays gave him, what, $20 million a year to come to Toronto, knowing that's what his stuff was. And yet, where's the next generation of that guy? Where's the next pitcher that's coming into Major League Baseball with a 90-mile-an-hour fastball?
Well, see, I think the thing is you have to be so good to be that guy to get the opportunity. Like Hendricks with the Cubs. Like, I mean, these guys are unicorns, right? It's like teams are looking at you. It's like they're not going to trust you if you're not throwing it high 90 or mid 90s at this point.
But that's high 90s as a reliever. You're making my point is teams are committed to this is the way to do it. And therefore, we're not going to look at anybody else.
Well, they're going to.
John will tell you the NHL did the exact same thing. Sure, if you were under 6 feet tall, you couldn't play in the NHL. Now there's all kinds of guys that are 5'9", 5'10".
But not they also changed the game. Exceeding. They also changed the game to give those guys a chance, right?
So, by the way, they're going to call a 91-mile-an-hour fastball guy a late bloomer.
Right. Well, here's the thing too, right? Like those guys, like you need so much conviction to stand there on a major league mound with guys hitting rockets at 115 miles an hour and throw, you know, low 90s, high 80s, right? You've got to have big stones to stand there and do that and believe in your stuff. And those guys are rare. They're super rare. Right. And, you know, that's what to me, like I voted Burley for the Hall of Fame. And, you know, I have no qualms about that because I can't think of a lot of other guys who did as much with as little natural ability as he did, you know, and that he had so much guts and so much conviction in what he was doing. And he didn't fear the outcome. And it's so hard to find those guys. Like coaches try, front office try to identify them. Coaches try to teach that and preach that, but that's something that's innate that not a lot of guys can learn. And, you know, you mentioned Halliday, you know, his motto was he wanted every batter done in three pitches or less. And, you know, if he went beyond three pitches with you, he was pissed off.
Yep.
You know, but that mentality is gone. Like you can't preach that. And guys want the swing and miss. That's what the game teaches you. And that's what guys go for.
Yeah, but the system won't allow those guys to develop and mature. They eliminate them right away.
Yeah.
Like the 5'8" center who scored 70 goals in midget hockey probably doesn't get a look in junior hockey and certainly not in the NHL. There was a whole era.
There was an era.
Guys would not get a look.
You're right.
And now they're getting a look. And yes, you're right, John. The game has changed a bit.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for some, and I would say wise, general manager to say, you know what? The way everybody is doing this and the way I've been doing this might not be the best idea. So we're going to change. We're going to try something a little bit different. And we're not going to insist that guys throw 95, 98. And here's the other point, too. We all remember a time... You know, nobody threw 100. Now there's guys who throw 100. There's more than a few.
Mm-hmm.
Are they unhittable? What? Not anymore. Guys tee off on 96, 97 mile an hour fastballs where 10 years ago, they couldn't get around on those guys. Everybody, the hitters have adjusted just the way the pitchers have adjusted. So that 96, 97 doesn't mean nearly what it meant 10 years ago. Agreed or not?
Yeah, I mean, totally. Still, you know, I mean, those guys get more margin for error than some of the other guys. And, you know, the other factor in this, and this I don't know how you change. I mean, this is really just you making a conscious decision to move away from the data, but would be the modeling, right? If you model out guys with lower velocities and those kind of repertoires, the vast majority of them are going to project incredibly poorly. Because the odds are against them succeeding. And, you know, teams, as much as they trust their eyes and they trust what they, what the results are, you know, they're also looking at, you know, longer term modeling in terms of making assessments on what guys are going to be. So, you know, how do you factor that in? Like you'd have to consciously, you know, train for it. You'd have to consciously work in some sort of exceptions in your analytical models to allow for those guys to get some runway. And you'd have to have an open mind in a way that it's really tough when, you know, Big Velo is sitting right there beside you.
Yeah, but
you know, Big Velo's sexy.
Yeah, I was going to say, though, the NFL went through a whole phase of, you know, great running backs and great running backs, and now running backs are disposable.
They're irrelevant.
You can never say pitching's irrelevant, but are we getting to the point now where pitchers are disposable? I mean that sincerely. I mean, are we getting to the point now where we'll just find another one? And we'll put him in for three more innings, and you know, and hold our breath if we have to. I mean, if you have a young kid who wants to play baseball, and you have dreams, and he has dreams of playing in Major League Baseball, are you gonna want him to pitch? Or you gonna want him to play third base? Or you gonna want him to play the outfield? It's an interesting conversation.
You know, among the most fascinating discussions I've had since the whole sticky stuff thing blew up is somebody saying to me, you know, Major League Baseball is doing this because they don't want to pay starting pitchers like Gerrit Cole and Trevor Bauer anymore, that they want to find ways to get rid of those contracts.
That was the first thing I thought of.
You take the magic juice away, and now all of a sudden these guys start normalizing. You know, I think that's a little too conspiratorial, but you know, I understand why people think that, because, you know, Major League Baseball's made its bed and, you know, needs to lie in it. But I do think that there's something to the fungibility of pitching, and, like, you know, a lot of teams are reluctant. You look at certain teams, like, you know, the Blue Jays were like this, or are like this now. You know, the Cubs have been like this. Other teams have been focused on, you know, drafting and developing position players, and then, you know, just finding pitching. And it's actually flipped 180 degrees since, you know, the days when, you know, Alex Anthopoulos was here, because his philosophy was like, you know, draft and develop as much pitching as you can, because it's got so much currency, and no matter how much you have, pitching never gets blocked. You never have enough. It's got incredible currency on the market. But, you know, if you're casting it out long-term, you know, if you've got a good core of position players, you know, you can generally find some pitching. You know, I think the Blue Jays are showing that there are limits to how deep you can go down the depth chart, and that you've got to have some, you have to have at least a few dudes you can rely on, have some faith in. But that might be the way to construct your team right now.
With Shai Davidi, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and chat some more back after these messages. It's McCowan and Shannon. Shai Davidi of Sportsnet is with us. We're talking pitching here. Let's talk about a guy that I haven't heard mentioned in quite some time, and yet he was a guy who was mentioned all the time. One of those, just wait for this guy. It was Guerrero with a bat. It was Pearson as a pitcher. Are the Blue Jays, I was going to say, are they ready to give up on him? But I don't think that's the case. But where is he, and why is he not here yet?
Right. So I think there's a couple interesting things there. I think for the first off, look, he had a very awkward beginning to the season. It's ramping up, spring training, everything's going great, has an injury, shut him down. It's a quick reset. He starts ramping back up again, has another injury, shut him down for a longer period of time, starts rebuilding again. The Blue Jays have a need in the major leagues. He's not quite ready. They bring him up. He has a terrible outing. They send him back down. And now they're at the point where they're just like, dude, find yourself, get your sea legs, you know, straighten things out, find the stuff where you were, and get back here. And we'll give you some time to do that. And that, and he's starting to, he's had a couple good outings in a row, AAA Buffalo, where, you know, the command is starting to come back. You know, he's working through his mechanics. You know, he made a bit of a tweak because, you know, he found that the delivery he was using during spring training was maybe putting undue pressure on the groin. So they're trying to alleviate and work around that right now. And at this point, the Blue Jays are just giving him a chance to develop, which is what he needs and is sort of natural for a young player's progression. As much as we've been waiting for Nate Pearson for so long, he's still relatively immature in terms of reps as a starting pitcher in professional baseball. So, you know, I think this is a step back that he needs. Now, the second conversation is, all right, he needs time to develop as a starter, but he can definitely help your bullpen, and your bullpen's awful right now. Why is he not in your bullpen? And, you know, the sense that I've gotten is that for the moment, at least, and I've asked numerous occasions and nobody's giving a hint that, you know, they're seriously considering a shift, is that they don't want to sacrifice the long term of what he can be because of a short term immediate need. And, you know, they don't want to truncate his development or cut off his development because, you know, Anthony Castro and company can't get out of the seventh inning.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I agree with that philosophy. I mean, I agree with management's philosophy in terms of the bullpen. They have enough invested in a guy who has significant upside that, as I've said on many occasions, you can find a relief pitcher walking down the street, you know, like pretty girls. There's another one coming by every 5 minutes. They may be a variable degrees of proficiency, but there are plenty of guys out there like that. And what's the value in this day and age of the stud relief pitcher who invariably only pitches in the ninth inning when you're ahead, when you're using three or four guys before that who could implode and make that closer effectively irrelevant.
So Shai, do you think we will see him this season on the major league roster again?
You know, I think the odds are yes, but a few things have to be there. I mean, one, he has to do his end, right? He has to get himself right and figure that out. And maybe he needs time, right? Like, you know, all things being equal, he would have opened last year at AAA Buffalo and would have gotten, you know, 10, 15 starts there. And then we would have had a serious conversation about whether he's ready or not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's getting those starts now, right? And he never found any sort of consistency last year. You know, he keeps having little injuries that, you know, pull him off the road. So I think he's the author of that in terms of, you know, he has to put himself in position to be that guy. But the second part is, will they have need? You know, will he find himself at a point where, you know, the Blue Jays have traded for a starter, have bolstered the rotation, and all of a sudden there's no opportunity? You know, that's entirely possible too. So, you know, I would think that the odds are, yes, he finds his way up here at some point. And maybe after he's, you know, gotten 100 and something innings in at AAA, you know, you bring him up at that point and say, okay, we don't have a spot for you in the rotation, but you can impact us in the bullpen, you know, for the home stretch here, which is actually the pathway I thought was most likely for Alek Manoah this year, but, you know, the fate's taken it a different way. So maybe that's how he ends up here, but I think that would be how he ends up on this team.
Well, you read my mind, because I was going to bring up Manoah because there's an obvious comparison there. You know, Pearson had limited innings, but Manoah had almost no innings before he gets an opportunity. And I mean, I'm intrigued by your perspective of what you've seen, and I assume it's pretty much the same as everybody else's. The kid's done a good job and he's pretty impressive. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, to me, the outing that I liked the most was the one against the White Sox, and it just went five innings, and was it two or three runs? Can't remember, but it wasn't dominant. But he fought through it. He got through it. He kept the game under control. He didn't let it unravel on him. He got a couple of good defensive plays, which helped him. But I think that, to me, showed you a little bit of what's inside him, and that he can survive on the mound. And that's what you got to be, because like you're not going to be like you said earlier, pitchers have bad days. You're not going to be a stuff all the time, and you've got to be able to give your team something on those days when you're not great. And he did that against one of the best offenses in the American League on the road. Still really young in his pitching career. So to me, I liked a lot of what I saw in that start. Obviously the others too, but I thought that one was really telling about where he's at right now.
The other thing we shouldn't avoid, and I think sometimes we make the mistake of feeling as though this is a guy we talk about too much, because you can only say so many superlatives. But in Guerrero, we are watching, I think, one of the great players, not just in baseball today, but this guy has a real chance to be one of the great players, remembered long after we're all gone, as one of the great players in the history of the game. Such is his skill set. Are you still amazed when you see this guy? He comes to the plate, and I think anything less than a hit is going to be shocking. Yeah. He's that good, isn't he?
I mean, it's been remarkable. I just think, I've gotten to cover a few pretty special seasons. You know, I think about Carlos Delgado in 2003, where he should have been the American League MVP. And, you know, it was a joke that he wasn't, to be honest. And A-Rod ended up winning it. And then, you know, I think that season was remarkable. And I think about, you know, the couple of the Jose Bautista seasons, Josh Donaldson in 2015. And this may be as good or even better than those years.
Oh, it's better. In my mind, it's on track to be way better.
And it's the completeness of the offense. Right. In every category, like batting average, which nobody cares about these days, but you know, it's there. Home runs, RBIs. And if you don't like your traditional measures, exit velo, weighted on base average, expected weighted on base average, hard hit percentage, launch angle, all those things, like he is just dominating. And it is so hard. I mean, you look at, I thought it was pretty interesting the two at bats he had against Aroldis Chapman in the Yankee series. You know, the first one, you know, Chapman was basically perfect in that first at bat. He was literally on the edges of the zone. He couldn't get Guerrero to chase, but he got strikes on the edges of the zone in the couple area, the low and away area, where, you know, it's the one spot where Guerrero doesn't tee off on the ball, and gotten out. And the second day he was like, I'm going to come in and challenge him over the plate. And Guerrero Jr. lines a base hit off him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, that's how good you have to be to get him out, where, you know, Aroldis Chapman, maybe the best stuff of any reliever in the game, you know, he literally has to be perfect against you. And that's what we're witnessing, which is so incredibly cool.
Well, I'll tell you the way I analyze it. And it's pretty simple. If the LA, California, Anaheim Angels called, and I don't know what they are this week.
Just say the Angels.
And called and said, we'll give you a Trout for Guerrero. My response would be, well, what else are you going to give me? And Trout is the best player in baseball. Trout is the best player in baseball and has been acknowledged as that. I know you're laughing there, and you're, but I'm not trading Guerrero for Trout.
I hear you. Like, it's interesting. The one thing to me, Trout is giving you defense too at a premium position, right? Which you're not going to get from Vladdy. Oh, and Vladdy's being great. But offensively, yeah, I think right now you're like, you know, Guerrero's just starting into it. You know, Trout is, you know, Trout's at, you know, plateau to decline, right? You know, Trout's not getting better. So you're cutting yourself off from seeing what Guerrero Jr. could be. But, you know, I mean, he's on that level, you know, like, would you?
And we're reluctant to say that, Shai. We're reluctant to talk about how good he is by comparison to everybody else. Because really, it's 2 months of this.
Yeah, right. It's a little too early, Bob. It really is a little too early.
Well, Shai, do you think this is a fluke?
That's a fluke and too early are two very different things. Yeah. I just think the body, this goes to body of work. Is the body of work big enough yet to say what you're saying? That becomes the key question.
Do you think it is? Do you think the body of work is too small?
Well, I just think that, you know, we have to give the league a chance to adjust to him and to see.
Good luck. What,
right. Well, again, but still, the, you know, is he going to be, you know, 1200 OPS Vladdy forever, or is he going to be, you know, 900 and something OPS Vladdy, right? You know, and that's a bit of a distinction. You know, are we talking, you know, generational Hall of Famer, or are we talking, you know, superstar? And again, it's a great distinction. You know, the Blue Jays are going to be fine either way. You know, it's not like one is bad. But, you know, before, you know, I think a better question would be, you know, would you trade him for Acuna or Soto or Tatis Jr. right now? You know, I think that's sort of the fairer question, because that's the ilk where he's in, where, you know, Trout will be, in, if not the best, one of the top three players of all time when he's done.
Yeah,
you know, assuming that, you know, I think at this point, you know, it's hard to anoint Guerrero Jr. on that level just yet.
And the frustration for both guys is they really haven't been playing for winning organizations. And so that's the juxtaposition of individual play in a team sport. I mean, Mike Trout, everybody talks about how great Mike Trout is. We get to see Mike Trout, how great he is. But, you know, let's get the Angels in the postseason. You know, let's and so when you look at Vladdy and how what he's doing and how good he is, and this team's now lost four in a row and they're under 500 again, and they're closer to the bottom than they are the top. And I call me old fashioned, but I'm a team sport guy. I want teams to win. I don't want Vladdy to win.
Well, I mean, you're not wrong on that, but I do think like. One, I mean, the schedule thing is not an excuse. It's real, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they've got in their next 18, they've got 10 dates with Baltimore, right? If they do what they're supposed to do in those 10 games, then we're having a very different conversation. Two, I see a lot of parallels between this club and the 2015 Blue Jays, right? Where, you know, you've got this amazing offense that other parts of the team are preventing you from leveraging, and you're just foundationally leaky. It's like you've got a great house with a cracking foundation that keeps pouring water into your basement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that team went 43-17 from August.
Well, after the trade deadline when they made the deals,
right?
The
chances when that happening again are pretty remote.
Right, which is why, you know, if you can force the issue right now in a trade and get some reinforcements, you have to, right? Because they've left nine winnable games against the Rays, Yankees, and Red Sox on the table in the past few weeks. Like, you win half of those, you're taking those away from your rivals and putting them in your standings. This is a different team. So,
agreed.
You know, they can correct this thing, but the clock's starting to move on them. And like, you know, this is baseball, you know, it's a long season, but you don't want to procrastinate and leave too much to the end either.
Speaking of Baltimore, we have lots of time where we might see a George Springer sighting at some point in a Baltimore series, I'm told. I said we're going to see a sighting.
I wonder, you know, it's, I was asking if he's going on the plane with them last night, and I got out. I don't think so, unless something suddenly changed. You know, he's up to seven innings. My guess is the Blue Jays would like to get him at least nine in Buffalo before he comes back, maybe nine in back-to-back days. I would think Tuesday in Baltimore, Tuesday in Miami is the sort of the date to tentatively circle. But, you know, if he starts feeling amazing, and I mean, we know what's happening with the team right now. You know, maybe they move it up earlier.
Yeah, especially if they find out he can pitch. We got to get out of here. It's never boring with you. We always have a fascinating conversation. Well,
at least it's not Ross Stripling and Joe Panic. That's, you know, at least it's not that. You know, you're not yelling at. Well, you do that for me. You yell at me like that. That's all.
I mean, so well, somewhere Dave Steve is saying, are you guys serious? You guys call that showing up a teammate?
Hey, well, it's in social media. I mean, right. Even Stripling in social media said, I apologized. I mean, yeah. I mean, well, the world has changed.
You know, yeah. I mean, it's
30 years later, Dave Steve still won't apologize.
No, of course.
Justify it.
Yep. Shy, stay well. We'll talk to you again soon, I hope. Thanks, pal.
You guys too. Talk soon.
Shai Davidi of Sportsnet. Back to wrap it after these messages. Our thanks to Shai Davidi for joining us. Mr. Shannon, anything further on your mind?
Well, this baseball team to me is a bit of, I expected them to be better than this, even with the sporadic pitching. The Yankees kind of, in my opinion, exposed them to what they are. I'm a little disappointed right now in where they are, and I think most Blue Jay fans are.
Well, I think if you're a fan, you have to be disappointed because they're not playing well.
Yeah.
Well, they're playing all right. They're not winning.
The focus here
clearly is the bullpen.
Yeah.
And yes, they've gone through a boatload of injuries. And Dolis now, I don't know where he's at. But I'm sympathetic to that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if you subscribe to the theory that your starting pitcher only has to go five or six innings, then you're going to put a lot of pressure on that bullpen, and maybe you'll have four guys march out there and all have their A stuff and get you through it, and it looks great, and maybe that'll happen for a week, but it's not going to happen night after night for a month, and it's certainly not going to happen for 6 months. And that's part of the problem, because you're taking starting pitchers out in the sixth and seventh inning who are pitching well enough to continue.
Well, there's always that magic elixir in the American League East, Bob. You know what that magic elixir, if you're not playing well, you know what it is? Baltimore. You can play Baltimore.
Well, and that's coming, right?
Yeah, that's right. Shai talked about it. You can always play Baltimore and feel better about yourself.
Well, maybe, unless you lose to Baltimore. And then how do you feel about it?
Then we might have to have a baseball summit. We might have to have a baseball summit.
You want to tell the people who's on Monday?
Yeah, just one of your favorite guys, one of my favorite guys, former Blue Jay manager John Gibbons from San Antonio, Texas, going to come on the show and said he's looking forward to talking to some good old friends. Thanks for remembering me, he said.
One of our pals, one of my favorite people. So
we're going to have some laughs, I'll tell you that.
Hope so.
Yeah.
Gibby on Monday. Y'all have a swell, in Gibby terms, y'all have a swell weekend. And if the crick don't rise, we'll catch you on Monday.
Hey, the other thing is to all those dads out there, including you, Bob, happy Father's Day.
And to you, John.
And our friend Mark Curtin, who ALS, Sunday is also the virtual walk to end ALS. So if you can find a way to donate, go to ALS. Canada.com.ca and try to help find a cure and help find improve a way to get more and improved medicines and treatments for people with this horrific disease.
You're here. Till Monday, a fond adieu.